WBOI Presents In Session is a new series where we'll hear from teachers, educators, and experts on all sorts of topics, sharing their lessons in the WBOI studios. As part of our commitment to lifelong learning, In Session gives us an opportunity to partner with those who have something to teach us. During this episode, we'll hear from Kristen Miller from the University of St. Francis on the topic of media literacy. Thank you for listening. Welcome to WBOI Presents. I'm Ben Clemmer. The producer in me is thrilled to be having the conversation we're about to have. We're making it available both as a podcast on WBOI.org and over the air. The media landscape has changed a lot just in the last couple decades. If you're listening to this conversation during the 7 p.m. hour on Wednesday nights at WBOI, there's a chance you could be in your 7th, 8th, or maybe the 10th hour of media consumption for your day. I wanted to set up the numbers a bit, as well as introduce our guest, Kristen Miller, Assistant Professor of Public Relations at the University of St. Francis. Welcome, Kristen.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
We were going over some of those media consumption numbers before we started recording, and you mentioned that you wanted to clarify how we define media as well.
Yes. Nielsen reports that the average adult spends about 10 hours a day interacting with media, often through several outlets simultaneously. It's because we are spending that kind of time consuming information that it's important that we have the tools to understand exactly what we are reading and watching and hearing. And the national conversation about news media makes me want to clarify some terms before we get started. When I say media, I'm talking about every medium, from movies and music to your news and advertising. I do think it's important to evaluate the news media you consume, but I think it's just as important to have the tools to evaluate the advertising, movies, and music you consume.
As well as radio broadcasts and podcasts.
Of course.
This is WBOI Presents In Session. Our guest instructor is Kristen Miller, and this episode is Media Literacy, Lesson 1. This is where we should put in a full disclosure. Anytime I say the words University of St. Francis, I usually follow it by saying I'm a proud alumnus. You are also on the community advisory board here at WBOI. Thanks to those connections, though, I know you are more than well qualified to speak about media consumption. Why don't we start with one of your classes?
Sure. I teach a class on the history and effects of mass communication. It's amazing to me the number of students who are surprised by the notion that you can be influenced by the media you consume. I think we're used to the idea that good food photography and an ad campaign might make me want to go get a slice of pizza, or that a fast tempo song can make you feel like dancing. But we're not as used to the idea that watching a movie about war might make you more empathetic to the struggles of soldiers, or less empathetic depending on who is telling the story.
We also often hear media get brought in when we talk about issues relating to violence. But again, there's two separate definitions of media there. If we're talking about media reporting of violence after a shooting, compared to the influences that might come from movies with a lot of exchange of gunfire between heroes and villains.
For sure. And in both cases, exposure to a topic changes how you think about it.
If you like a certain type of music or film, there's more people creating content now than ever before. And maybe it'd be more correct to say that it's all more accessible now than it ever was before. The internet makes it so you're never too far removed from any of it.
Exactly. You mentioned earlier that the media landscape has changed, and I agree. I think the biggest and most radical change is that it has become much easier for us to create and consume content. And both changes have made some challenges for audiences. One of the biggest problems is this idea of media overload, which basically just says with so much information available, it blurs the distinction between what is useful and what is useless. Because so many people have the tools to make content that sounds and looks like credible information, it is much more difficult for everyone to make the distinction between what is credible and what is not. Now we have so much content, and maybe most of it looks pretty credible, so we become overwhelmed and start to become more selective about the messages we consume. Which you think, great. If only more people were more selective about the messages they consume, the world would be a smarter place. Except what happens is that we tend to lean into our own biases when we become overwhelmed. We look for content that we're pretty sure is accurate or that already supports the ideas we know or believe. And knowing our brains work this way is why it's so important to consume a wide variety of messages, especially from our news media.
I think it was James Veitch in his TED Talk about "This is what happens when you reply to spam email." that showed that not only does the internet give us access to everything, but it also gives everything access to us. So with that kind of power over what we make a part of our media consumption, the onus is on us to make sure it's good for us. And I feel like this is kind of an extension of the conversation I had with Kim Bowers. We talked about how literature might be the one media that we can't treat like fast food, but media habits have changed so much that if we're going to have an internet-based diet, we need to know where things are coming from. I might be taking the food analogy a little too far here, but we need to know what's organic and what was once pink slime.
Media literacy gives us that skill. Media literacy is the skill to shift through what is useful and what is not. It requires us to understand the social, political, and economic realities of media creation. Media doesn't just happen. Its creation is influenced by the systems and the people who make it.
I can think of a couple examples in our own building. Julia Meek focuses on local arts, and she's been a part of the fabric of our local arts scene for decades. We recently hired Barb Anchiano from WVPE in the Elkhart and South Bend area. And when South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg announced his plan to run for president, Barb was the perfect reporter to cover it.
Let's use your show as an example. When you're thinking about what kind of local stories to cover, what are some things you might consider?
Well, we do a lot of news roundups, so I usually start with what were some of the big topics to come out of this last month of coverage, both locally and nationally. On a more basic level, I usually try to figure out how to tell a story with good quality audio.
Right, so you choose a story with good audio. It's not because a story without good audio wouldn't be a good story somewhere else. It's because the reality of your medium, the radio, demands you have something to record. There's a mass communication theory tied to this idea, the agenda setting theory, which basically says the media plays a role in helping the public decide what is important. Right now, by interviewing me about media literacy, you're telling the public that media literacy is something that's important that they should care about. This is just one of the ways that the systems of media creation, in this case radio, influence how the audience gets to learn about the world through media. This goes back to the idea that it is so critical to consume information from more than one source. If all you watch is TV news, you might never see a city council meeting, not because city council meetings aren't important, but because most meetings aren't very visually stimulating.
That actually makes me think of the old adage, if it bleeds, it leads. A fire, a disaster, or a crime scene might produce the kinds of visuals and drama that keep an audience tuned in.
Exactly. And I think it's important to consume information from a variety of outlets because those different media are giving you content that will work for their systems. But I do want to take it beyond news media because all media is created and all media is influenced by the system that supports its creation. For instance, think about The Hunger Games. This is one of my favorite examples, and sorry if you haven't read the book or watched the movies, but let's start with the book. Ben, what is the story about?
A young girl winds up representing her community in what is essentially a televised combat in an arena. All of the fighters are called tributes, and they all have to fight and survive until there's only one tribute left as the victor.
Great summary. In the books, the main character, Katniss Everdeen, was 16, a minor. When Jennifer Lawrence made that movie, she was in her 20s. Generally, movie studios age up characters in order to avoid the labor laws around minors. Adults can legally work for a lot more hours, so thanks to the economic realities of the movie industry, we have a 20-year-old Katniss Everdeen instead of a baby-faced 16-year-old. 16-year-olds look much different than 20-year-olds. How does it change the story if you had to watch a bunch of actual children being that violent? They did keep one character young, Rue, and her story kind of emotionally wrecks the audience. It's supposed to. But what if every death in the story hit you that way? You couldn't sustain that kind of emotional response for 90 minutes, and no one would want to watch that movie. So aging her up has an economic bonus. It's easier to work with an adult schedule, but it also has a psychological bonus. We're much more comfortable with adults perpetuating that level of violence. It's one thing to read it in a story and sort of abstract the reality of minors committing that level of violence. It's another thing to see it. I think it's so important for us to know that media isn't a direct reflection of reality. It's okay, dear high school students, if you don't look like the high school students in movies because the actors are 25. But we don't think about that when we're watching every man in the story fall in love with the one female character. As an audience, we get so wrapped up in the story, we kind of forget that it is a story. Just like when we read the news, we get wrapped up in the telling of it, and we can kind of lose sight of the fact that the news is also influenced by the systems and people creating it.
I guess then as a media consumer, where you could run into trouble is if you approach all of the media you consume with the same mindset. If I'm going into my speaking as the host of All Things Considered here, if I'm going into my mid-afternoon, early evening consumption of news with the same passive consumer philosophy that I take into I am a DC fan going to see the new Aquaman movie, there's not really an intelligent parsing out of the information that is in that process.
Right. And I'm making the argument that there should be an intelligent parsing out of information when you go see Aquaman. You should actively consume all of the media that you interact with and be engaged in critical thinking at every level of media consumption.
So for this in-session series on WBOI Presents, we're talking to educators, and critical thinking is a huge part of education, but that doesn't mean it's a societal norm. Are we getting better at media literacy as we consume it and as media and its landscape continues to change?
I think we're still learning about some other media, including news media. We need to get better at asking ourselves questions. What makes a good news story? Are there trained journalists telling it? Are there multiple sources with verifiable data? And are they sources close to the story and not just analysts?
It's better to hear from the senator who's at the meetings trying to negotiate the immigration deal than it is to hear from an analyst who could be able to speak intelligently about this topic, but isn't on the ground and part of the situation they're speaking about. But we can take that out of the political arena, and it still applies. You're going to get better information hearing it from the general manager of a team than you are the former star player who's now an analyst for a major network telling you about why you should care about a certain topic.
Exactly. So why is it important to ask these questions or to point out media literacy as an issue? Because we use stories to help us shape our idea of the world and how the world works and how we fit into that world. And if I'm being influenced by a story at that level, I want to know who is telling me that story. I want to know why they want to reach me with that story and what tools they're using to make sure I am influenced by their story. Often media literacy isn't about having the right answer, but about asking the right questions. Who is telling the story? Why are they telling it? Who do they want to reach? Is there a voice missing from the story? I always ask myself, why?
When I coach speech team students, I'd always tell them to follow the money. If you know how an organization that's telling a story got its funding, that could tell you some things about why and how the story is being told.
I had a conversation in my communication class about advertising and reaching audiences, and it kind of came to this conversation about Star Wars trailers being promoted on ESPN, and the students were a little bit confused, and we had a conversation about whether or not that was an appropriate channel for Star Wars. And while there is an enormous base for both sports fans and Star Wars fans, they were concerned that maybe there wasn't enough overlap to make that choice. Well, then you take a step back and you realize that Disney owns both ESPN and Star Wars, so they're using one of their properties to promote and support another. It's just another example of how the economic realities of media are shaping the content that you have access to.
I might be someone who actually fits into that area of overlap because I am a lifelong Star Wars fan, and the Monday night football game between the Rams and the Chiefs where 105 points were scored was one of the most entertaining football games I've ever seen in my life. This does make me think back to your mass communication class because I took it. I remember a project that I hope you still have your students do where you had them look at not just the media they consume now, but media going back to childhood and everything that's influenced them to this day. Care to tell our listeners more about that?
At the end of the semester, after learning about the economic, political, and social systems of media, students have to write a paper where they reflect on their media consumption, and they have to walk through their living memory and discuss their relationship with media throughout their entire life. And it is so fascinating to read how people find themselves in media over and over again. So many people have stories where they saw a job in a movie or a TV show and decided it was the job that they wanted. I have a very distinct memory of when I was a little girl wanting to wash my face at night before bed because the little girl in my favorite story did it every night.
When I was younger, my entire family would sit down to watch The Amazing Race and Survivor, and I know that these shows contributed to my interest in travel. I remember watching these shows and being interested in how to become one of the members of the film crew for these shows, and it would still be a dream come true.
One of my favorite childhood shows was Blue's Clues. The main character, Steve, engages the kid audience, finding three clues left behind by his puppy, Blue. The show taught me to be curious, look for details, and recall memories. With action figures, I would reenact the situations presented in the show or create my own scenario. Then I started recording my reenactments with the computer webcam. The video was recorded straight into the computer for me to mess around in Windows Movie Maker. It was the simplest editing anyone could do, but those small moments were the seeds of the career path I'm taking now.
Media helps us understand ourselves and our relationship to the world. It tells us how to behave. It helps us understand what it means to be human. And when only a small number of individuals control the stories that we watch and read and hear in media, I just think it's that much more important to be critical thinkers about how the media we consume gets made, how it is made available to us, and how we have access to information as we decide who we want to be in the world.
That makes me think of last year when it was actually NPR's Ron Elving visited the Fort Wayne area, and he gave a talk about how deep is our commitment to democracy and the health of our democracy. And a lot of that goes back to having an informed electorate. And how you get an informed electorate is hearing from as many people as possible. He talked about vox populi, vox dei. The voice of the people is the voice of God.
And I believe that the cure, and really the only effective cure that can be for what ails democracy, is more democracy. If we believe that vox populi, vox dei, like they inscribe on the buildings, is actually true, then the answer is to hear from more populi and to hear more from them and to hear from more of them.
If you are trying to get that voice of God result, you need to hear from more populi. You need to hear from as many people as possible. And that is not the way our media landscape is set up now at all.
It is not. And going back to our example from earlier about media overload, it's not how our brains want us to consume media. When faced with so many options, we want what is known, what is easy. It's also not how the media economic systems are set up, which is why supporting independent voices in news media is so important.
I had a feeling a conversation about media literacy would wind up with support NPR as a message in there somewhere.
The message Ron Elving shared when he came to Fort Wayne is a great one. And it's a conversation I had with my students where I asked them these questions. I said, is reliable information and free-flowing information important to our democratic society? True or false? And they came to the conclusion after some conversation that it is true. And then I asked them this question. Understanding that news matters and becoming a more discerning news consumer can change your life and the life of the country. True or false? They also decided that that was true. And so understanding that, yes, reliable information is important to a democratic society, and that understanding news and becoming a discerning news consumer can change your life, what do we do with that information? And how do we engage better as a participant in our democratic society? And we all kind of came to this conclusion that we need to be more active media consumers, where we focus on trying to get as much information from a variety of sources as often as possible. And as a class, we kind of came to this conclusion that we all need to read more, because when you read news and information, it allows you to process more actively. And when you are actively involved in the consumption of media, it allows you to think more critically about the information and the stories you are receiving.
Kristen, thank you so much for being a part of the inaugural run of our WBOI Presents In Session series. Thank you for your support of the work the news team does here at WBOI. Thank you for supporting me and pointing me towards public radio while I was a student.
It's an honor.
And thank you for listening to WBOI Presents In Session. You can find more episodes of WBOI Presents In Session at WBOI.org. And while you're there, you can find the very latest from the WBOI news team and stay up to date on content we produce year-round. Our theme music is by Noah Campodonico. Our sound effects are by John Dawkins. Thank you for listening.